Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Hey, good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Mark Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer.
Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or ANJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced, the jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. So there are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedies in the Law. And Your Remedies in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict predecided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could raise anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights. Anything that you can think of. If it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of what you think of a network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you come online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look at these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number in the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, so winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if your remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
All right, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. Tonight's speaker
is Mr. Tony Davis. Tony's going to be talking tonight about Title 83, wrapping everything up. And I really think that's because things that basically come in. Am I correct on that, Mr. Davis?
Yes, that's correct.
Good.
Well, you can hear me, everybody. We're having a problem here where I'm not able to cut off the recording.
Okay.
I'm fixing it right now.
Yeah, basically we're coming to the conclusion of the issues related to Title 18. Okay, and what we have found and discovered, okay, and we've dealt with this in several cases, and what we found is that the issue is not the prosecutor. In the case, the prosecutor has already waived. And why have they waived?
I believe I have gremlins here.
They have waived because at the latest, and let me repeat that, at the latest, in June of 2009, the number two person in the Department of Justice has determined that there is no valid statute that authorizes a court of the United States, and this is a federal district court, or an appellate court, that authorizes them to issue a judgment to put someone in prison.
Stand by, everybody.
Okay, that's a very powerful statement, so let me repeat it. The Department of Justice, based on their own study that was asked for by the head of the Bureau of Prisons, and at the latest, in June of 2009, determined they have no statute that authorizes a...
Beautiful. Finally. Unbelievable. I apologize, ladies and gentlemen. The disclaimer is a recording. And so we always start with that, and then I cut it off the recording and then do the part that I do and then turn it over to PJ, to the caller tonight. But both my primary phone and my computer belched, for lack of a better expression. So, anyways, we have people that are first-time callers tonight, and I'd like to, if I may, invite them to share their first name only, so I can associate that with their phone number. And in doing so, I will show that they have listened to the disclaimer. So the first person, I have to get your number first. Let me get a magnifying glass here because I'm using another phone. 7939, phone number ending in 7939. Give me 1 minute and I'm going to unmute you. You're from, it looks like Detroit, Michigan.
Yes, Frankie.
All right. Thank you. Go ahead, say it again.
Frankie, like Frankie Beverly and Mays, or Frankie.
Yeah. Thank you.
Can you hear me?
Much. I appreciate you. Yes, ma'am. Hear you perfectly. Thank you. All right. One moment. Now we'll do the next one. Is ending in 9094. I got to unmute you. Just give me 1 moment. Looks like it says Temple, Texas. Go ahead. Temple, Texas, first name only.
Jay?
J-A-Y?
J-A-E.
J-A-E. Oh, like Ray, but Jay. Great. Thank you, Jay. All right. Having fun here, aren't I? And then the last is ending in 0672. Appears to be from Hollywood, Florida. How about that? I'm from Davie, originally. Go ahead, Hollywood. First name?
It's Norm on the number.
Who?
Norm on a new number.
Okay, Norm. I know who you are. I got you. I recognize the voice. I just didn't know you were from that neck of the woods. I thought it was Miami. All right. Hold on. So let me mute. Excellent. Thank you for your patience, ladies and gentlemen. And let me just start, if I may, with the part that I start with, and then we'll turn the call over to PJ. I want to establish first that the purpose of the Tuesday night calls is basically to drive home the fact that we are operating two national governments, one that was created by the founders of our nation, where we have rights and immunities from the creator of the universe, and all the documents that were established are estoppels or bars against the government from proceeding against you in any way. And then the other form of government is really very, very limited in scope, but has managed through government schools, which we call public schools, making certain that you do not know or understand our founding documents, you do not understand your standing in law, they have been successful in literally hijacking our nation and converting a free people into slaves. Wow. Did he say that? Yes, he did. When Americans today, Americans of African descent, when their forefathers were brought here as chattel, as property, to work on plantations, they were owned by a plantation owner. However, when they were set free under the 13th Amendment and then given legal standing under the 14th Amendment, what they didn't understand, and nobody frankly understood at that time, was that they merely translated from being the property of one slave owner to the property of another slave owner. And that latter slave owner is the Congress of the United States. This may be your first time hearing it, and it's a shock, and I'm sorry for being the one to give you that shock, but it's the truth. And I can show you, not as an opinion. I never offer my opinion unless I clearly say it's my opinion. And I base my opinion then on precedent, case precedent, court cases, which those of you that have attended this call many times in the past know that I become quite boring reading court cases aloud to you so that you have the benefit of the particular meat and potatoes of it that affect you directly. So I want you to understand that your purpose for being on this call on Tuesday specifically is to strike in front of you the stark reality of the difference in citizenship, it's called personam jurisdiction, and the difference in land jurisdiction. That's called territorium jurisdiction. And that stark difference is the difference between being a free man or woman or being a slave, literally. It's being on land that you can hold in the highest form of title called allodium, or it's being a tenant on the masses plantation. It's as simple as that. And the end result of this is to encourage you to make that step to change your status, which we'll get into in a minute, and then realize that we have people here like PJ, who is the spear, the point of the spear of the team that is assembled. I'm not on that team. I coordinate, I assist, but I'm not a guru. I'm not a law person. My job is to bring attention to the talents of these men and women and to assist you in finding the best one who will deal with your issue. Let me go so far as to say again, and I've said it many times in this call, that this issue of correcting your status is so patently important that we're not taking any, or not we, they are not taking on any new students until or unless that you're in the process of correcting your status. So it's that, that's that. And PJ is here that once I finish what I'm getting ready to talk about, he uses that as a springboard, if you would, and then he goes off into a tangent on whatever his thoughts are that I've impressed on him from what I've talked about here, and then we open it up for questions and answers. So we're going to start by the question, what is an American national? An American national is a citizen of one of the freely associated union states, such as Florida, where I'm from, Florida being one of the, quote, collective names of the states which are united by and under the Constitution, end quote. This is quoting Black's Law, 4th, 5th, and 6th Dictionary, defining one of the definitions of the term United States. A true American born on the land who has protection of our Constitution and wasn't converted into corporate slavery by way of their birth certificate. Question, do I have to give up any benefits? Answer, most of you who leave U.S. citizen status and become home to state nationals or union state citizen status will retain your benefits and actually gain power. Well, what if I was born in Washington, D.C.? Well, you can answer is you can still record using one of your parents' birth states. Question, how do you continue to operate in society that is collect a paycheck, get an auto loan, purchase goods once you've made this transition? Answer, well, you actually gain power, not lose it. Continue with your new terms, your new vocabulary, your new freedoms, your new power, your new glossary, and your new rights. Simple as that. There's no the loss of anything. Well, how do I protect my children? Answer, well, you have them go through the same process that you go through for each one of your children. Question, when can we vote to take over my city charter? Wow, that's a bold question. Well, once you learn your laws, you paper up. And then you join your local assembly of fellow Americans who have corrected their status in your county. And then you hold elections and you take your county back. It's as simple as that. Are there any consequences? Yes. If you don't learn your laws and you give them a tacit agreement, you will fall back into their jurisdiction. So that's why we have these calls. That's why we have the people here to assist you. Question, I've heard a union state citizen is an American national. Are they the same? Yes. It's important. The answer is yes. It's important that you step up to help govern your country or your state, your county, like being a politician but without the paycheck. It's a duty, and we have an honor to serve our fellow man and our communities. Well, so what is a U.S. citizen? I thought that was a good thing. Well, in truth, a U.S. citizen is civilly dead. I've heard said they're lost at sea, and they are still listed as an enemy combatant to an enemy of the United States. A U.S. citizen is property. They trick your mom and your at your birth with a second birth certificate, which is a registration to an estate, and of course they show you with your all caps name. And this is interpreted by the U.S. State Department as a 14th Amendment citizen. So even though they have evidence of you being a state citizen, they will log you in as a 14th Amendment citizen, i.e. a federal citizen. A question, if I legally change my name, do I have to file a legal name change as the as to witness the papers or the birth name or both? The answer is all names will get covered in your paperwork. To be sure that they don't use any of the names that you own, you will demonstrate the chain of name change from your birth certificate through today. There are some people, I've got one of them as an information provider. She changed her name from her birth record. So when she's doing her process, she will have her birth certificate as well as the court's decision of the court order to change her name from one to the other, and that consists with keeping the chain of name title in place. What are the benefits? It's a good question. Benefits are all your rights recognized from your maker, the creator of the universe. Whether you call him Yahuwah and others call him Allah and some call him whatever, your constitutional protections are in place. You have more money, more freedoms, less headaches, less traps like courts and bills and fines from the courts and license requirements. Question, what do I do after correcting my status and completing my paperwork? Well, the answer is besides enjoying your freedoms fully and the power given to you by the Almighty One, Yahuwah, who most call God, and are protected now by the Constitution, you're also encouraged to join your local, state, and county assemblies of others who have corrected their status and their standing in law and self-govern within your communities. You can also possibly put on a private conveyance plate for your car, whatever you want to do. It doesn't matter because when you get pulled over, you produce your paperwork from the State Department of the United States and they go back to their car. If you can see them in your rearview mirror, watch the expression on their face when they get a red flag on their monitor, on their computer monitor that says, quote, do not detain, do not investigate, release immediately, lifetime concealed weapons permit. That's what it says. They walk back to your car and say, Mr. Jones, Miss Jones, whatever. You know, you're doing 95 and a 70, and I just wish you'd keep your speed down and keep it safe for everyone else. Have a great day. That's it. No traffic ticket, no court, no nothing. So once you, what paperwork do you question? What paperwork do you need to carry once you've switched over? Is there anything that we need to do annually after that paperwork is filed, money, voting, whatever? The answer is you need to carry your U.S. State Department identification card with you and preferably also your passport anytime you're traveling. You vote for your du jour government positions at your local city and county level, prayerfully by the people in your county who have corrected their status. And this is how our founding fathers had planned for it to be. And this is what we can do at a county by county, city by city level. Take it back one county at a time. Question, do I still make my mortgage payments when I become an American national? Well, if you are an American national, the court of proper jurisdiction for you is not what you're accustomed to visiting occasionally if you've ever been sued or got a traffic ticket. That courthouse is set up for federal citizens. It's not set up for American nationals. Any attempt to sue you, whether it is to collect a purported debt or a charge or from a prosecutor, a court of proper jurisdiction must be convened. And that court doesn't currently exist at this moment in this time for them to be available to you. It will be in the future, prayerfully, but not at this time. Question, can you and your business be sued in the courts? Nope. But you need to unincorporate all your business. No more hoops to jump through. Question, how does it affect licensure? Do you still need a driver's license, a fishing license, a hunting license, a business license? Are you subject to laws requiring auto insurance? Are you still able to use services like the police and the fire and the EMS? Answer, licenses are made up by the foreign entities that are squatting on our land. A license gives you a right to do something that is otherwise illegal. So is it illegal to marry? Is it illegal to go about your way from one place to another? No. Is it illegal to fish or to hunt? No. So you still use all of these. They work for us, the people. These are our buildings. They must all unincorporate at our command. And again, this is when you populate a county with sufficient enough people that you can put together American common law courts. So what is the purpose of becoming an American national? You gain all your power, all your rights, and the estoppel against the federal government, against the state government, our constitutions. U.S. citizens are slaves to the foreign entity that's squatting in Washington, D.C. Americans have all the rights and freedoms owed to them. So much the better to be on top directing than to be on the bottom being told what to do. Does this remove CPS from possibly taking our children? 100% yes. And you and your children are no longer considered property of the United States. Kidnapping of a child or an adult is not allowed in a American common law de jure republic. Question, do you still get your Social Security check and Medicare? Answer, yes, you take ownership of these accounts through of the United States Incorporated you set up in your name without your full knowledge and consent. You've paid into these. They owe you. It's a contract. Question, how do we enforce it for our family once we do this? Knowledge, answer is knowledge and constant studying of the real law, constitutional law, and knowing their frauds. These weekly conferences that PJ authors and GW authors are where you get your principal training. Question, do I have to fill out paperwork to become an American national? Yes, that effort is effected for you. In other words, I assist you in processing your paperwork. Question, traveling outside the United States of America, is this still possible? Well, yes, you just use your new passport. The passport that when a law enforcement officer scans it says, do not investigate, do not arrest, release immediately, lifetime concealed weapons permit. And the reason that they have the phrase lifetime concealed weapons permit is simply because they don't want to tell the officer that you are the embodiment of what they've told you to look out for, and that is the, quote, sovereign citizen, end quote. I tell everybody, you cannot be a sovereign citizen. There's no such thing. You're either one of the sovereignty, a co-sovereign, or you are a citizen, one of the two. And then if you're a citizen, you either are an American national, which is a citizen of one of the union states, a union state citizen, or you are a United States citizen. That's it. All the choices. Where do I research if I were to lose my military benefits or VA benefits? Answer, you don't. In the 13 years that GW has been doing this specifically on traffic cases, not one of his hundreds and hundreds of students have ever had any of their contracts violated where money is owed to them for their service. How do I buy property and a vehicle? Answer, preferably by way of a charitable religious trust or in the alternative, the same way that you're accustomed to, but without the cost of property taxes, driver's license, registration, and other sales tax fees, etc. Question, if I were to become an American national, would I get rid of my birth certificate? But then if I do, will they say that I'm an illegal citizen because I don't have a birth certificate? And I wrote, and the answer is you don't get rid of it. The birth certificate is your proof you are a citizen of one of the union states. In this process, everyone wins. Nobody loses. So why isn't it being done as of yesterday? Why isn't all the people in the country jumping on this bandwagon? Answer, many American nationals have been and are being deliberately misidentified as United States citizens, making them ineligible to enjoy their natural rights. They receive only civil rights from the Congress assembled, which they may be given or and taken away. Only we, the living people, have the answer. Everyone who is eligible to reclaim their birthright, their political status as American nationals may do so. This standing in law as an American national, otherwise known as a Union State citizen, is so critically important to you that were you to seek the assistance of the information providers that are marketed under your remediesinthelaw.com, you will not be accepted as a student unless you agree to do the correction first, correcting your status first. So your first step in this journey is to go to correctmystatus.com, and start the process. And that's the conclusion of what I have to say tonight. I want to thank PJ for being so very patient with me. And let me get this thing unmuted here. If you bear with me one second. There we go. PJ, thank you so much. I appreciate your patience, sir.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, it's quite interesting. An individual was standing by a federal officer, and somebody got off on something, and they started asking him, you know, how come that guy gets off and everybody else is going to be prosecuted? And he just turned and told him, he says, he's not one of our persons. He didn't say nothing else. the guy standing there, they just all looked at each other like, what are you talking about? But anyway, when you take on a relationship with the United States, you follow the formal process of becoming a United States citizen. You're entering into a type of a contract with them for benefits and services. Every time they claim that you are associated with the United States, they claim it's for a benefit of service, for service. Even if you're robbing their bank, it's considered a benefit or a service. And, of course, robbing a bank is a benefit and service to the thief, providing he gets away with it. But that was pretty telling. And the more I learned about it, I've understood this a long time ago. And what's interesting is the federal judges don't even understand it all that well. And I think they don't want to understand it all that well, because recently we've had an individual judge say that they think they're going to quit their job because they're getting tired. They don't want to send anybody in jail again under false pretenses, and they know if they stay a judge, it's going to happen. So that's what we got going on. It's very difficult to talk about a lot of things. We're not even allowed to air it because it's just not timely yet. So it's kind of difficult to tell what I'm supposed to talk about, what I'm not supposed to. But that's what we do when we have an individual that wants to hire our services or my services. We examine the case. Most of the cases that come to us lack a crucial step in bringing the charges against them, and we immediately go after it and attack it for lacking formality or lacking the constitutional requirements for maybe the warrant, maybe the grand jury indictment, maybe the arrest, maybe the production of the law. Title 18 has not ever been fully enacted into law. They don't have authority to go out there and arrest people. That apparently the Congress has opted to leave that up to the states instead of the federal government under federal charges. So, the high-level lawyers and the Congress, they're coached on the relationship with the United States with people. It's contractual. Now, if it's contractual, how in the world does the opportunity and the privilege and the benefit to be arrested for something come into play? Is that something that you're accustomed to with contracts with people? If I contract with you to paint your house or mow your yard, why would I put myself in a position to be at risk of going to jail just for doing that activity or not doing that activity? I'd rather just go do my business somewhere else. And that's probably what the Congress has decided when they entertained Title 18. The majority of them said, no, that's not right. If it's business for benefits and services, why is it converted to a crime? And if it's converted to a crime, should be fully disclosed that nobody has to do business with the United States. Nobody. Not one single man or woman. every single one of them can stay away from the United States business-wise. And the reason, if you're from a foreign country and you want to become a United States citizen, they take your money and swear you in, and then you're subject to their written laws thereafter and the requirement to pay taxes and file and things like that. But they can't force anybody from a foreign country to become a United States citizen. If you come here under, getting driven out of a foreign country that's gone bad and your life is in danger, like Somalia, I believe it was, a great number of people were, their lives are threatened, and they headed to America, plus other places in the world. And America opened up to them and brought them in and naturalized them, and they're, from that point on, they're a United States citizen. But as far as the American who is born on American soil, he is here already, and he has the right to be on American soil. He doesn't have the right to be on United States soil, but he has the right to be on American soil. And he doesn't have the right to be on other people's property that they own, but he has the right to traverse across the country on the open ways. It does get a little, if you don't own any land, you still have right to the open ways without cost, without license. And of course, you're under common law responsibility. Now, if you want to have a place to live and sleep and do business, you're going to have to rent land from somebody that owns land. But you do have the open ways are open to you. There's been individuals that have gone to court and they've argued that, you know, why am I getting charged fuel tax for a right? Because I have a right to mobility. How can you charge a right? And the judge actually agreed with the guy and did not make him pay for fuel tax. Now that's a rarity, and it's probably the only fee out there that actually goes to something decent, and it's a very difficult thing to do otherwise. What they're really supposed to do is they're supposed to charge anybody that uses the open ways for commercial activity, and then you would pay the open ways and get paid for by every time you order something, you'd pay the tax on it. So if you only ordered food, I don't know if all states in America do not charge tax on food, but if you only ordered food, there none of your labor would actually go to the upkeep roads because you wouldn't be taxed under that system. So, Michael, any names popping up there? He might have stepped away from the phone there for a moment, or the control box.
I mute myself. I mute myself so you can't hear my background noises here. Ladies and gentlemen, press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. Press star 2 for questions. And for those of you on Freedoms Radio, you'll notice that there is a silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. Left-click inside of that. Type away your comment or your question. I'll be happy to give voice to that. On the outside, you'll see a place to place your contact information, then hit submit, and we'll go from there. So, again, press star 2 on your keypad. If nobody asks a question, we're going to have a really short call. Mr. Michael from Las Wages, Nevada, go ahead.
One short question. Do federal judges have to have a bond?
Of course.
I've never seen anybody be successful with challenging the oath of office or the bond. That they don't have to have it. I would assume they do have to have it. It's possible if they're not bonded, they're not in their office. So I've heard of that before. If you start pushing buttons like that, they figure out a way to dismiss the case before you can do much damage to them. That's my experience.
All public servants have to be bonded. There's a woman who has no legal background whatsoever. I think she's up in Massachusetts someplace where she started this. She went after local school superintendent backstory is that she has a child, autistic child, and he freaks out when he's made to put the mask on. He doesn't want to wear it. And the school gave this mother all sorts of grief over the fact, wanted her to pull her child out of school and, you know, homeschool him, et cetera, because he just was intolerable to be working there in the school system. She took the matter to the school board and basically got totally ignored. So what she did is she went after the bond company of the superintendent of schools in that district. And the long and the short of it was is that the complaint that she filed against the bond company was something that would have personally caused a cost of $40,000 or something, or maybe it was $400,000 was the penalty for the complaint against her bond that would raise her insurance or whatever. And she turned to the county attorneys to defend her. And the county attorney said, no, we can't do this. We can't step into it. She's working. You don't have the proper bond set up. She complained, and now you have to deal with it. And they totally threw her under the bus. Now, I assume, and I'd like to explore this, that would have the same effect on a judge if done properly. So I just want to share that. Back to you, PJ.
Yeah. Now, under the bus, was a school bus?
Yeah, school bus, right. That's funny.
Okay. Yeah, I heard the chuckle in the back of somebody. So does that help answer your question a little bit there?
Yes, it did. My daughter had a court case where she was found in contempt of court while she was in the care of the local sheriff. The same judge found her another fine for not appearing in his court for another traffic case or whatever. And he was the one that put her in jail. So they clearly knew where she was at. She had asked them time and time again when her court date was at the jail, and they denied that she had any court date. And they've all violated the law and her rights, but so far they're getting away with it.
Now, what we can do for her, if you choose to hire us, is to go in and examine the process they went through to charge her, because it's quite probable that they failed to properly charge her. Now, if they did properly charge her, it's probably fraudulent. So, because she has to qualify to be prosecuted by a U.S. court. The U.S. court is not a general jurisdiction court. It's a constitutional court. It's a created court. The people allow that court to be in operation for specific purposes, and that specific purpose is not for it to turn on its creators, the people. The U.S. courts are for U.S. persons, for U.S. activity, specifically in United States land, which is 25% of America, and they can only go after them under United States written law. So it's got the person, the activity, and the land, the territory. And I can almost, there's a good chance that they're lacking one of the three requirements for jurisdiction. That would be a good lesson. I was arrested 5 times once, and I was challenging this. I intentionally got arrested 5 times for failure to appear 4 times. I was arrested on the traffic stop, and then I failed to appear 4 times. And on the fourth time to failure to appear, which was the 5th arrest, I gave a judicial notice. constructive judicial notice. And the judge tried to ignore me, and I gave it again. He tried to ignore me. I gave it again. He tried to ignore me. I gave it again with more language added to it. And finally, he took judicial notice, and they took me away in handcuffs. And then the sheriff came out and said, PJ, turn around. I don't know what happened in there. Your case has been dismissed. So that could very well happen to your to anybody that's been mistreated. They're a bunch of Nazis. These guys are Nazis at times. And
they're on power
I think most
trip.
Times they're on power trips. They believe that they have the authority, that they're the highest court in the land. It's not true. The people have the highest authority in the land. The Constitution is clear that one of the founding fathers said, and that the Constitution is actually our protection from the United States. It's our protection from them. So let's use it. They cannot come against us on a great many things that they do. And it's pretty devastating to them. And Michael is working with people to bring together a common law court so that when they do mistreat us, we can convene these people together and take a look at the situation and make a determination. And those determinations are quite often valid. I mean, they're accepted readily by the United States because when push comes to shove, they sit down and say, you know, these guys are right. The people, that's the highest jurisdiction in the land. It's not the United States Supreme Court. United States Supreme Court is the highest jurisdiction in the administrative United States court, but it is not the highest court in the with the sovereignty of the people. The people are. Yeah, so go ahead and ask another good question. That was good.
I'll get one later here. I'm thinking, so I'll have my daughter call Michael and talk to him.
Yeah, there might be a stepping stage that we can go through that's not very expensive. I don't know. Maybe they can work out something to see if it's something that we can dive into without sell the farm to get our services. But no, normally we're pretty reasonable. Okay, next question out there, Michael.
Yeah, thank you, Michael, for your comment and question. And anybody else, press star 2 on your keypad. Otherwise, we're going to have an early call tonight. Can't believe we only have one question. I see a lot of people here that I know have questions. I know. Press star 2. Otherwise, it's going to be an early call tonight. Let me check Freedom Radio while you're thinking. Go ahead.
It's interesting that if you've ever been out there doing good, you've probably been harassed by the United States. I mean, that's just what they do. You start learning the truth about law, sticking your head up and asking questions, and they'll attack you. I had an individual in California that he was just simply investigating if the government had authority to take away these guys' wrenches back in like 100 years ago. That's all he was doing, is doing research, and they came up to him and threatened his life. And, you know, that's just wrong. If the United States has done something wrong, I don't care if they took the land and made a military base out of it that saved the nations from being attacked by Japan. I don't care if that's the case. They still have to do it right. And if they don't do it right, what's going to keep them from doing it right the next time? But anyway, he was investigating where an officer went in and falsified his authority and took large pieces of land away from people, and he never had congressional permission to do so. It was all bluff. And that's the story with property taxes. Property taxes, by by and large, is bluff. And if it's not bluff, then they still need to prove up their authority to tax you. This is a scenario I'm running through my mind now. Is okay. You got. I'm just going to use Nebraska. Okay, you got Nebraska. It existed before statehood, so it existed quite some time. And then the population got up high enough where it qualified for statehood, and the people there voted for statehood, which allowed them to give some land to the government, the United States. And the United States came in and started setting up some forts, arsenals, and docks. And, you know, they had some Indian problems and so forth. So those forts, arsenals, and docks had a legitimate reason. They weren't set up to keep the Germans or the Russians away from Nebraska. They were set up for internal strife to begin with. So and then statehood was established, and then some people started coming into the land, and they decided to set up a city, and they called that city Omaha. And very small, probably 100 people. And then they got a charter from the state of Nebraska, which is a subdivision of the United States, for incorporation. And they started the city up. And then as the city grows, they annex land. Now, my question is if I own a house in an area that they claim that they annex that area, or they have taxing authority, I believe they have to prove they have taxing authority to charge property tax on my land, on my particular land and the property in it, which is generally the house. They have to prove it. They have to prove it as a factual evidence, and that's what I'm doing. I don't think they can just grab land and start charging property tax just because they annexed it. I think annexed is a individual's right to contract with them. I don't think they could just take your land. It'll be interesting. That's one of my challenges I'm presenting to them to prove up, because they damaged a lot of my houses by forcing property taxes and so forth. They've even torn a few of them down or sold them for property taxes. Not very many, but just a few of them. It'll be quite interesting. But property tax, when you go to the state property tax written law, it says all property in this state shall be taxable. Okay, I don't have a problem with that. Prove that my land is in this state. Because if you go down and you search the statutes, it'll say in there that in this state is a term, just the same as this state or state is a term, and it's defined in their statute as a possession or territory of the United States. Well, if it's a possession or territory of the United States, that means that the United States has an ownership interest in it. Or at least it's been ceded to the United States, which is the type of ownership or type of grant by the people, which says that they have, I believe they have general taxing authority over that land then. But that's only a small percentage of the land. I don't think if the city of Omaha grows to encompass all of Nebraska, does that mean that all of Nebraska is now owned by a subdivision of the United States? I don't think so. I think the people still own it. It's going to be quite interesting. Now, people say, well, how do you pay for this and how do you pay for that? Well, the same way you pay for a hot dog or a hamburger down the street. If you want it, you order it, you pay for it. If you want fire protection for a year, you go down there and say, what's fire protection, fire truck service, fire department service going to cost me on this $500,000 house here? And they'll tell you what it costs, and you pay them for a year's protection. What about the roads? Well, we talked about that. The roads are paid buy every gallon of gas you buy, part of that money goes to maintaining the roads. So it's not that difficult to figure out how things are taken care of. Oh, what about the schools? What about the schools? Well, if you send your kids to the public school, you got to pay for the use of the public school. If you send them, if you keep them at home and homeschool them, you don't have to pay for the public school. If you send them to a private school, the private school will send you a bill. Life is rather simple. Right now, they've got it set up to where, oh, you buy this house, you got to pay us $15,000. I got a client that said, you got to pay us $15,000 just to have the house. Just to have the house, you got to pay us $15,000 a year, $25,000 a year, $50,000 a year on $1 million house. And they're just dreaming it up because they don't have taxing authority quite often. Sometimes they do, but quite often they don't have any taxing authority over that land. The owner has taxing authority. And if they don't have evidence of ownership, if they didn't retain any right to ownership when the title was conveyed to that present owner, then there is no taxing authority. So, Michael, reach out and get some questions if possible. Otherwise, we can hang her up.
This will be the last call for alcohol. Oh, well, Michael raised his hand again. Go ahead, Michael.
Okay, on most titles, it says tenant in common.
Yep.
Who are you in common with?
Well, just because it says tenant, just because it says tenant in common doesn't mean it's tenant in common. Just because it says state of Nebraska on it, just because it says Douglas County on it, that doesn't mean it's in Douglas County, because Douglas County is a federal zone, because the word county means federal possession or territory. State means federal possession or territory. Just because they use a zip code to help locate it, it doesn't mean it's in a federal zone. The truth of the ownership is the truth of the ownership. The document doesn't prevail against the truth. Might be true, but that's what they have to prove. A lot of times, people get run down to a lawyer, and that the lawyer looks at this thing handed to them by the State Bar Association, and he copies it out and fills it out, and that's the language that's on it. Most of those lawyers don't even know. So, go ahead. What's your question?
Well, we have been so indoctrinated, it's people just believe everything, like the Postal Service. They no longer consider the post office. It's not the same as the Postal Service. And you can't send a half ounce or less a letter for 2 cents, because it's still the law. And I do that quite often.
Yes, yes. I don't do
people.
It. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, and that's good, because the postage amount that's regulated by Congress is under the gold standard. And you're absolutely right. They don't have any authority to change the postage requirement to a Federal Reserve note. And as far as what was the other thing you pointed out? You said postage. What was the other thing?
It's a half ounce or less for 2 cents.
No, I know, but you said something else about probably about taxation.
Well, the
Postal Service. Now, in America, it wasn't not too long ago, all mail went over a post office zone. Okay, that's the zip code is a post office zone. And then the Postal Service takes it from there and delivers it out to the people. But they don't do it like they used to. They used to run they do it quite often, but that's something you can ask. Every letter in America is supposed to pass over federally owned land so that the federal court has jurisdiction. The United States has jurisdiction. But that's not the case. Not all that stuff passes over a federal zone. I was in a small town 80 miles from Omaha, Nebraska, and the postmaster there told me that every letter there goes 80 miles in one direction, and then in the middle of the night it's driven back 80 miles back just to get this little stamp on it, he said. He said, he goes, that's the most crazy thing I've ever seen. All I had to do is take that letter and turn 8 inches and put it in Bill's mailbox. So he could not figure out why in the world it was being trucked over 80 miles just to get a stamp on it and come right back to the same post office. He thought that was crazy. But the reason is, that's how the federal court gets jurisdiction. It has to, because that particular post office in that small town is not owned by, the land is not owned by the United States. So the United States doesn't get jurisdiction when an envelope is dropped in that particular location. They have to ship it to a location that's a federal zone. So,
all right.
That's what they did. Okay.
Michael, if there's not anything else, we're going to go next to Kent. Do you have any other questions,
okay,
Michael?
No, go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, Kent.
Okay, good evening, gentlemen. PJ, I wanted to ask you a question regarding property taxes. Last night, Greg was talking about a woman in Florida who, with her doctor husband, was buying some property, and apparently, if I understood the story correctly, the escrow agent stepped in and informed them that they could not buy title insurance because she was already an American national and had gone through the process. Greg didn't give us enough information as to all the background details of how she achieved that or how the escrow agent actually found that information out or how the title insurance company found it out. But you've been talking about property taxes for a while, and I know you handle those kind of situations. Do you think at this point in time for someone who goes through one or more of the processes that are available to correct your status to American national or union state citizen, whatever one would call themselves, do you think that that's going to be basically a done deal if one achieves that status, as opposed to the way people, including possibly yourself, have been challenging property taxes to date, trying to get this done through land patents, et cetera, when the man or woman doing it is not really in the correct status?
I don't think it's going to make any difference, but I just don't know. I don't have a clue of why you would be deprived title insurance because of your status. The Articles of Confederation says that if the United States has any benefit or service to its citizens, its persons, its legal entities, they must provide the same also to the free man. So that basically says that if they're providing title insurance to somebody that is a legal person as a United States citizen, they must do the same for the free man, the neighbor right beside them. So I think you have constitutional evidence that they must provide that. Otherwise, they run the risk of losing their corporate status. Because I'm sure the title insurance company is operating under corporate status. Go ahead.
Yeah, let me ask Michael. Did I understand the story correctly last evening, or am I missing a material piece of it?
No, I think you've got it all. But what I think is best is for to reintroduce the question to GW, since he has firsthand knowledge of it. PJ doesn't, and
okay.
I don't.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your comments.
Yeah,
but property taxes. See, they claim that if you're a U.S. person, you have waived your rights, and that's probably true when you're on government land. But I don't think you waive many of your rights when you're operating off of their land. Now, they'll claim that if you're a U.S. citizen, that you're required to report all your income that's made abroad. Now, abroad means outside of the United States. So, basically, they're saying no matter where you make your income, you have to report it on the 1040 tax form. So, it's possible that you're subject to property taxes when you're abroad. I don't know. I can't see it myself, but it's weird things that operate out there. I don't believe that if you become a United States citizen that you don't, that does that mean you lose your right to own property free and clear? That's not in the United States. You have ultimate title on. That's in the middle of Nebraska or Texas or whatever. It's just things that we're learning. One thing we're learning is that a great many of these court rulings by these higher level district courts, federal and state, they're not constitutional. They're just flat out not constitutional, and people are following them. And even the judges, we talk to honest judges occasionally, and they'll meet with us on private, and they'll say, you know, that right there, that official immunity and so forth, that's not constitutional. That guy can't violate your rights with a bond or an oath of office or an appointment as a judge. He doesn't have any authority to violate your rights. He's not protected by official immunity. But, okay, next question, if any.
I don't have any additional questions.
Thank you so very much, Kent. We appreciate you. And I want to thank you for arranging that phone call I had today with your associate that was informing, and there will be follow-up on that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for joining us this evening. Let me check Freedoms Radio one more time just to make sure that the attendance there hasn't asked a question. Hold on. Nope, all clear. I want to thank you all for joining us this evening. Our next open call will be Saturday with Judge Bernie regarding how to arrange your affairs in such a way as to make you judgment-proof. That is to say, if they sue you and they get a judgment against you, they can't take anything from you because everything is in different trusts and is operated through a corporation sole. Works really well. And then again, Monday, we'll have GW back. In the meantime, we have recorded calls tomorrow and Thursday that may be of interest to you with regards to credit card cases and also IRS. Until then, good night, everybody, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.